This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 847, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
All right, I'm on Johnson Avenue in San Luis Obispo, and I'm 5 years old, or six, maybe. And indications that there's something wrong with our new house. Trip down the wire twice daily. I'm in the living room watching the Watergate hearings while my stepfather yells at my mother, launches a glass across the room.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 847. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hey, hey, sup?
It's time to get up and have some fun.
Woohoo! You've known me for how many years? I mean, like a long time.
Yeah.
I've never been a woohoo person.
You're a club guy. You're a guy who likes to go to the club.
I like to take a balloon and tie it around my head. I'm half shirts.
Glow sticks.
Nipple painting.
Yeah. I just want to clarify for the conspiracy theorists out there. We're not joking about this, having fun on the show. We just had a very deep conversation about life right before the podcast. So we are now having to pivot. We're pivoting to more lighter fare. So
it was like, get it all out. Oh, everything's awful. And then like a systematic deconstruction of how everything is awful and how it happened and how there's no way out. And I'm like, fuck it, let's do the show.
So
this is the other part.
Yeah, exactly. So here we go. Now it's time. This is the glow sticks and MDMA part of our week. So we
are, you know, a lot of people know those as like real things in their lives, and I know them as punchlines.
Exactly. We are fanboying every week. We read a bunch of comics. One of us, by the way, the bunch of comics part, where are all the comics?
Well, I have a bone to pick with you, pal.
All right, well, let me get through the script part and we can get to that. We'll talk about those books, talk about the other books from the week, the patron pick, the listener mail if we have time. And here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. Exercise some caution. This week, Josh had the pick. And so here's the bone. So 2 weeks ago, was the fifth week and it was a tiny week. Last week was still pretty small. This week, I thought I had 11. I ended up with 13 books, which is still a small week for me. I usually have 10 more. Mm-hmm. So I've had three sub-15 books, which is sort of my like dividing line between like a small and like a medium week.
You said to me, small week's only 11 books. And that put a thing in my mind, hey, man, don't worry about it. It's cool. And then Tuesday, Wednesday comes along, and I didn't make a list this week. Because, in fact, when you say there's not a lot of books, I'm like, oh, I don't need to worry about it too much. And I get the Marvel DC books, and there was like six or seven. It wasn't too many.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start adding it up. Like Wednesday night, I start adding it up. And I went somewhere Wednesday night. So I lost Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, wait a minute. All the other publishers... Like, the ratio was way off. Normally, It's like Marvel DC are two-thirds, and then everybody else is like a third. And it was reversed this week. And I kept finding new books I had to get. And then there was two books that I had missed this last issue of. So I ended up with, like, 19 books.
Well, the two books, that's your fault.
You did this to me, like, 2 weeks ago, too. It happened again, and I'm not listening to you anymore. That's what I learned.
What you need to do is just look at the list on Monday. Then you'll know if I'm telling the truth or not.
I know. But you're a very regimented person, and I'm not. I am bad at time management, personal time management.
I like to plan my week and know what's coming.
I know you do.
Anyway, what's the pick of the week?
Pick of the week is Captain Marvel number 175.
Get a glow stick and calm down.
Is that the secret?
Yes.
Glow sticks?
If you had more glow sticks in your life.
Do you ever think about how toxic the ingredients in glow sticks are? Like that somewhere in the ocean is just like a billion tons of glow sticks that are never going anywhere.
This conversation was better suited for before the show.
I know. That's where I go. See, that show Josh. And
I don't
like,
think about that. I just think about the glow.
Sad, sad liberal Josh.
Captain Marvel 175.
Yeah, this is one of those picks where I got back and I enjoyed my books. I had to read a lot of them, but for the most part, it did not feel like a slog. Even the ones like when you're like, oh, I missed this. I had to add this later. I did. I enjoyed my books, but it was not a standout kind of week. But what I did remember is while I was reading Captain Marvel this week, I just thought, you know, we're at the 41st issue of this run,
mm-hmm.
and it's great. It's just
and this
good...
this is the final issue of this particular arc, which has been fun.
Right. You know, and I, like I said, I jumped in here just in the 20s at some point. Mm-hmm. And picked it up like nothing. You know, just like you're supposed to do. Like comics used to be. You know, I didn't have to go back and read six trades. I knew who the character was. I knew the rest of it. You know, I don't still understand who Binary is or what it's about, but it doesn't matter. And mm-hmm. it feels great. It's pretty much an all-female cast.
Yeah.
Which is just apparent. It is the thing that it is, but it isn't constantly telling me that that's what's happening. Look at what we're doing here. It's just great characters who have great relationships with each other and are all interesting and diverse from one another. And it does. It has a different feel than like a you know, Captain America and Bucky being all tough with, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's good. It's interesting. It's given me a little bit of that same feeling that I enjoyed from the Spider-Woman book, as Jessica Drew is, of course, in here. I really like this supporting cast that has been assembled around Carol Danvers, just to the extent that she's basically been away in some magic construct where the magic people are testing her because of stuff that happened. I mean, again, this is one of those really cool things, is that we are reading about the consequences of things that happened in earlier issues that I didn't read. And it totally works. Like, I don't know how many times, like, this is one of those books that you could just be like, you could jump on it and go, oh, that was fun. And you could go back and read everything before, but you don't have to. So anyway, so Carol is off doing this thing, although she comes back in this issue. But all the other characters, so you've got Binary and the accuser, Cree woman, who's, I guess, Carol's sister now.
Yeah.
You know, and they have a little adventure together. And... you know, there's for some reason, there's always giant monsters in the background of this book. And I like that. You know, like, that's such a Marvel thing, to have giant monsters running around New York City. Then at the same time, you have this sort of little council of magic elders, you know, and it's a little silly because they basically put Carol on trial. But, like, who is there is Agatha Harkness, who is always sort of a gray character, except in the MCU, where she's, you know... the lovely Catherine Hahn.
She's even more gray in MCU than she is. She's usually... it doesn't matter.
I thought she was... like, I feel like she was evil in MCU. And in
she was, but she's not really evil in the Marvel universe.
Right. In Marvel, I don't think of her as evil. She's a different thing. Like, Stick. She's like Stick. You know, Dr. Voodoo is there, and Magic, who I don't really know because it's an X-Men thing that started in the 90s. I don't understand it. And Scarlet Witch. So, like, you know these characters, and a guy in a witch hat who you don't understand, which is funny. You know, and they're just discussing all of the things that happen. And it's like a real moral discourse on magic users, which is completely fake. There's, like, almost no parallel. I guess there is. There's sort of people with power or whatever. You know, but if I look at these pages, they're just chock full of word balloons and people talking, and I did not notice it. Kelly Thompson is great with character interactions and dialogue, and I think she's gotten really good at still making them feel like superhero books with stuff going on.
And this is the one for Gary Art, right? This part?
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah, beautiful.
You know, I just, in a very short order, I think I find myself enjoying being with these characters and liking their relationships with each other. And, like, you want them all to get back together and go on an adventure together. And at the end of it, Binary's like, I gotta go. And you're like, but don't go. And that's how they feel.
I've read every issue of this run, and the only negative I have to say is that the Binary story is almost exactly the same as the Kree sister story, but it's been fine because they're all really charmingly written.
Right.
I can see why they'd send her off, just simply because there's a lot of characters now, and it becomes a team book at that point. I'm not excited about the next issue being an Axe tie-in because I'm not reading any of those books, but.
Well, we don't have Spider-Man on the list, right?
Yeah, there are a bunch of comics tying into AXE. I enjoyed Hazmat's bit where she's in the middle of eating a taco, very dangerously eating a taco, by the way. Not really prepared if any of those ingredients fall out. But...
well, hold on, though. Well, yeah, I see what you're... because here's why. I'm sorry, we obviously have to do this.
It's overloaded.
No, in the first panel on page...
page 10.
Page 10, she's double fisting tacos.
I mean, that's great. I appreciate it. I applaud it.
She's double fisting tacos, and then somewhere between panels 3 and 4,
she ate it. She eats it in her mouth.
She eats a full taco mid conversation. And I mean, honestly,
You can see her cheeks are bulging out. She's like sort of licking her fingertips in the fourth, fifth panel. So she stuffed an entire taco in her mouth during this conversation with
Spider-Woman. The taco hold.
It's a big taco, too. They're not small.
Yeah, no, they are. Yeah, it is a dangerous way, but it's not silly.
The thing is, they look like tacos.
They have the weight. That last panel, it looks chalupa-like.
Pizza is the perfect walking through New York City food. Right? You can hold it in one hand and eat it. Taco's more dangerous because it's got a lot of ingredients that could fall out. You want those on a plate. I mean, I eat a lot of street tacos in L.A. I know, you can't just start walking around double-fisted tacos. You'll get stuff everywhere.
Right, but we're talking about a superhero. She's a nuclear being.
Right.
Or no, like a poison. Like, I mean, I gotta respect her. I don't think she's coming from a place of ignorance. I think she's like, well, this taco business has to happen, and this is how it's going to happen, and I'm just going to take that risk. And I don't know how you can't respect that. The fact that she was double fisting and then ate an entire taco.
I forgot about that part. I didn't.
I think I might have a new top five character.
and then they brought her along, and she was not needed at all. She's like, well, I was eating tacos. I could have been still eating tacos when you called me.
I feel like it's pretty self-referential. I don't know. Like, if I was to put this on paper and you were to sort of lay out the elements of what happens on each of these pages and what the people are doing, I don't think it would be very good. But it is written in such a way that I just really enjoy it. And, like, it has become one of those books that when it comes out, I'm annoyed I stopped reading it for some reason. But B, I'm like, oh, great. This is going to be good. This is going to be, like the same way I feel when Usagi Yojimbo comes out. Or...
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, anytime you have a writer who knows the characters and writes them very well, and, it's no matter what kind of silly situation you put him in, it's going to be fine.
There's just this, like, it's got, I'm looking at page 9, and it's after they just see that Carol has come back and Jess is pulling her cheeks to see if it's really her. And it's charmingly drawn, and it's just... I don't know. Like it's light and heavy at all the same time, and it's. I hope it keeps going for a while. I hope that this little AXE thing just is a blip, and then we can keep going.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's just a time issue. I mean, I guess I'll read it. I don't know. I guess I've read all the other.
I'll probably read it. What the heck? It could be some moments in it.
Alvaro Lopez has been drawing a lot of these issues. Is a terrific, Marvel superhero artist. Does great character work, does great action, and then the Juan Frigeri magic stuff I've just been in love with. This arc, even though this arc I've had minor problems with, it's been a lot of fun, and the art's been terrific, and Scarlet Witch has been great in these, acting as Carol's defense attorney in this magic trial. I don't even remember why she's under the magic trial, but...
Because she killed the Enchantress's son.
Oh, right, Ova. That was a great arc.
Right, I think I read the very end of that, actually. Yeah. I think that's when I came on.
And Enchantress has brought her up for magic charges because she tram traveled and killed her son.
You're not supposed to kill a magic person, or do you, like, whatever it is. And then at the end, like, Carol's, these five people, six people, whatever. And at the end, Carol sort of shows Enchantress, like, what happened and why she was wrong or whatever, but Enchantress can't get over herself because those people are like, I'll see you again. But I think it was a good cap. It, closed the door on this thing, but it didn't solve the problem entirely. It didn't just shuffle it away. We'll deal with, we got to here. We'll deal with the other part of when it comes. It gives them something to do later. I do want to point out, and this is probably your pick of the week moment for me. This is when I was like, oh, this is great. And I didn't send you this page because I wanted to be able to talk about it. Page 6.
Mm-hmm.
They are outside of wherever they were eating sandwiches. A lot of eating in this book. I like that. The accuser lady is trying to beat up Binary because she's got Carol's face and she thinks it's wrong. And you've got Jess. This is one of my favorite little things is they have just fought zombies, I believe, or green goo zombies that Enchantress created. And you've got Jess holding her one arm back and hanging off her. And I love the scale of that and that kind of move because it's funny, but also very physical. And then what happens, it's just three panels. In the second panel, you see the Godzilla go by. And by the way, it's Godzilla. There's no it's Godzilla. This is Godzilla.
Yeah.
It walk by in the background, and you don't even notice it.
Right.
And then is the third panel, they do notice it because it shoots out flame. It's just a great little three-panel sequence.
Yeah.
I think it's really beautiful. And if you look in that first panel, you got the dead bodies around. In the foreground, in the right corner, there's a hand of a guy who's lying on the floor. It's just really nice.
Yeah, it's a good page.
That to me feels like that's the kind of page I like because you don't notice the monster in the background on the second panel. until you see it do a thing and they recognize it. They have a Hellboy moment. Ah, crap. You know, like
it was a good issue.
It was a strong issue of a book that makes me happy, you know, and I was happy to have it.
Yeah.
It's your pick.
Good job.
Did you read True Cult number 2?
No, I didn't read it.
You read the first one?
No.
Okay, I thought you did. I'm sorry.
No, you read it. I didn't read it.
There was just a little edge there.
No, I'm just saying you talked about the show. I hadn't read it, and that's fine.
I found the first issue to be pretty enjoyable, but also really intriguing because the one thing it does have going for it is that I've never read a comic book like this. There's a guy, and he's a long-term employee of the Burger Lord chain.
Oh, right. And, this. Yes.
And he gets stuck in this job, and he comes up with this brilliant plan that he is going to very efficiently and effectively rob all the stores in the nearby strip mall during his break.
Right.
And escape scot-free. Except something goes wrong. And he almost made it work. You know, he's like really smart. It's like a Clerks kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Clerks 1. Apparently there are other movies after it, but that's like Jaws. every time they dip back in, it kills the idea.
The dream is dead.
The dream is over. What have you done?
The dream of the 90s is dead.
Anyway, so... And then, of course, the thing goes wrong at the end. He gets kidnapped and put in the back of a car. And at the same time, there's this woman... who shows up, this girl, and she's trying to get a job at Burger Lord. And she talks. The beginning of this issue starts as they're put in the back of a truck or a van and captured by these people who turn out to be a satanic cult. And they had something stolen from them inadvertently in his robberies.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire time, many of the pages are black with only word balloons. And it's the girl talking about her experiences. And questions about working in this fast food establishment at great length and detail. And it sounds like it would be, tedious, but it's really funny. She's like, so how often do you change the grease traps? Because I find that if you change the grease traps this way, listen, are your shake machines broken every day or every other day? Because that's always a thing and they never, like, it goes on and on and on. And either they're very good at thinking up things or there's some sort of experience. They talk to somebody because it is really... It is really authentic and on point, and it's very funny. And then at the same time, you've got the dialogue of the guy who's trying to figure out what's going on, and then the cultists who are taking him somewhere and won't tell them anything. I have no idea. You know, you read a book and you go, I have no idea what this book is. There is so far no supernatural of any kind. The cultists seem to be crazy people. There was a point in the middle of it, and I was like, this writing. The actual, like, the dialogue, not just the girl that I was talking about, but everything. I was like, this writing is very strong. This is not, I don't know Scott Brian Wilson, I don't know who he is, but the actual text, the prose of the thing, just really sung.
Mm.
And you know, the art was fine. It like, some pages are fine, and other pages are, like, not quite there. IDW.
Yeah, there you go. That's why.
Yeah, no, I get that, but we're going to talk about that on the next book. I have a hard time explaining why. But, you know, you just read writing. You read prose of somebody, you go, oh, wow, they've got a voice. They have a thing.
Scott Brian Wilson is a TV writer.
Okay, well, he's good. And I think that really hooked me in this one. I really like this book. And it, from out of nowhere, I don't know why there's a V instead of a U. I don't like that. But at all. Because I want to say it's Trukvilt, which is Yiddish, I think, for cult. It looks like a book that doesn't have a ton of money for the art team, but it does the job.
The covers are good.
Yeah, well, that's where you put the money now, so people buy them. I really dug it. This is the kind of thing that, you know, like a Vertigo book would have done in the early 2000s for a few issues. It would have looked probably a little bit better, but... you know, one of those strange little books that comes and goes and you don't really think about it. We really enjoy it at the time being.
I actually really like the art in Dark Space Wildfire, except for one aspect of it. But
yeah,
I was never going to read this book until you talked about it on the show because the title is awful. And Scott Snyder...
If you just lose Dark Spaces and you call it Wildfire, right. Then...
Dark Spaces Wildfire.
I think Dark Spaces is supposed to be like his... imprint or you know, like the well, Joe
it's
Hill?
Not a, it's not a good title because for when you've got a guy who's known for horror, you call a book Dark Spaces Wildfire. I'm assuming it's a horror book, whereas sure. this is just a pure, at this point, just a pure crime story. Mm-hmm. So I would never have read this, but you talked about it. I was like, oh, shit, that sounds awesome. So I read one last week, and I read 2 and 3 this week. And this is great. This is one of the best things that Scott Snyder has written in a long time.
Yeah.
This is really compelling. It's the story of these five firefighters in California who are, you know, people, you talked to us before, people may not know that a lot of the wildfires being fought in California are fought by convicts.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other issue we don't have time to get into, but... Here we got these five women from the women's prison who are this unit, this firefighting unit, and one of them has realizes that her old boss's house is near the fire, and he's this asshole billionaire who's got tons of crypto and servers there, so they're going to go steal, you know, with a thumb drive, steal billions of dollars of his crypto during the fire. And at this point, they're in the house, and you know, inevitably, there's something goes wrong. They discover a body. That he's got a woman, dead woman, wrapped up in plastic in his wine cellar, and then everything starts going wrong pretty rapidly after that.
Fast.
It's great, you know.
It is really good. I think I'm with you. This isn't gonna be a criticism. It's just you said that. The thing I have a little trouble with is I don't know. I'm having a hard time telling the characters apart, and the book very much assumes that we know them and can tell them apart.
Yes. This issue, even though I read all three issues in like two weeks, I kept thinking one of the women was a man. There's the woman with the brown curly hair who is continually drawn with very male characteristics.
Well, they all had ash all of themselves, and it looks like stubble.
Yeah, I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but there was one point where, you know, it's page 24 on your digital reader, and it's like, who is that? Because this looks like a dude. But,
Oh, it does. Yeah.
But and then like then page 27, same thing. I was like, is there a guy in the crew? And I had to go back to the first issue and reread everyone's bio. I was like, no, that's not a guy.
I think it's because it looks like facial hair. Like I mean, that's got a lot to do with it. It's not too many characters, but they're going so fast. Like the themes are really strong. Like Scott will lay his themes out very clearly. You know what it is that he wants to talk about, and like the metaphor here is very clear. You know. But all the characters are interesting. It's just that when they talk or when I see them, I can't remember who's who. And another reason for that is that the coloring is very, actually, the coloring is thematic. So the coloring is supposed to help you know who they are, I think, because the one girl has blue and the other is green and what. But I don't know that that's working. I think it's a really good attempt. Mm. I don't think it's executed. I don't think it's working exactly right. It's a really interesting book, though. If you were to give me this and tell me that this is Scott Snyder, I would be surprised. But now that I know it is Scott Snyder, I'm not surprised. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's definitely him, but it's getting away from the stuff that he's done. And I think you're right about the Dark Spaces thing. I didn't really think about it in that way.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, I don't know, you know, horror book. And then you talked about it, I was like, whoa, it's a crime heist book?
Yeah.
And at the end, there's a big cliffhanger, and you know the whole thing was he started out saying, you know, there were five bodies discovered at this house, you know.
Oh.
So now it's like who's, you know, and there's five firefighters, so you're wondering, are they all going to die? Already,
there's already a body there.
And I've got a body, and we've got four guys rushing the house with guns at the end. So are they going to be the dead body? Like now it's not so clear who's going to survive, and who's not going to survive. Mm-hmm. So he's throwing a curveball into everything.
I think that. The other thing about the art is, and it doesn't look like Marvel DC mainstream art. It's a different kind of thing going on here, and it's maybe a little unpolished, but the layouts are extremely ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they are overdoing the stylism in a place where they need more clarity. I think that, you know, they're taking bites, you know, the meals bigger than their stomachs, you know. I think the storytelling needs to be simplified more.
And I wonder if that's a script thing or if that's an artist thing.
I don't know. I'm guessing it's an artist thing and they went with it because it looks cool as shit. Mm-hmm. Like the layouts look great, but when you read it, I don't know that it translates well. I think it, you know, it'd be like if you recorded a song and put in way too many tracks. And it's just like, pull those down, you know, and let us have the thing because There's something really good here, but it's a little bit of work.
Yeah. This is fun. This is also IDW.
Yeah.
And yeah. if you're, you know, it's a solid Scott Snyder effort, and it's an unusual genre, especially these days. So I was happy that it's basically, it's a, let's rob this. And it's an interesting idea, you know.
Yes.
It's not it was, a new idea. What I mean is, like, put a heist in the middle of a high-stakes environment, you know? Like, I've...
Right.
Like, I watched some terrible movie about a heist during a hurricane. Like, you just you pick a natural disaster and stick a heist in it. It's not a new idea, but it's a prescient one right now.
That and
most of the West being on fire. And
right. And the metaphor is very strong.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I think it was in the last issue, though, there was a really cool bit where they break into the house and... The treasure, the thing there is a giant like mainframe server, like it's a bunch of computers, and it's like there it is, and you stick your thumb drive into it, and then, you know, 45 minutes later the money will be on that.
Yeah,
and I just a fun little you know, turn on things.
It's a whole new world.
Yep. But they got to be careful because their thumb drive could be like $10 million, and then the next day not. They got to get that. They got to cash that shit out. Midnight Suns, S-U-N-S, number one, from Ethan Sachs and Luigi Zagaria. Colors by Antonio Fabella. And that's a very Italian back line. And Joe Sabino there on letters. I didn't know what it was. It looked like another dumb cover with a title that didn't mean anything. But I saw Ethan Sachs, and I was like, oh, I'll grab that. And it was pretty high up there in the patron pick voting, but it was not the patron pick. But I actually enjoyed it quite a lot because it was the Strange Academy characters, and I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read it?
No, I didn't. What's the pitch for the book?
I thought you'd give me a second while I reacquainted myself. The zombie girl, I mean, it's a Strange Academy story, really. The zombie girl who she wears a thing around her neck that makes her look like a regular girl.
Yes.
And obviously she's got some issues with that. She sort of has a blackout moment where she sees, it's almost the same thing that happened in Strange Academy, that she is at the center of an apocalyptic event. And then she wakes up, and everybody else, all the other magic users, saw the same vision.
Okay.
So they saw her being part of the end of the world, and, you know, it wasn't the people at the school all realized, oh, crap, we saw it too. Mm-hmm. So Zelda and Nico and Dr. Voodoo and Blade was there teaching a class. And Agatha Harkness saw it, and Clea saw it, and Dr. Doom saw it. So he shows up at the end. And the idea is that they need to protect the girl because all the other magic users have to stop this thing that happening. So it's kind of what they did, because Doyle was supposed to be the guy who brought about the end of the world in the other book. Or was it the girl? One of them. His girlfriend.
Yeah, well, yeah, the last volume ended with it being the normie was the bad guy.
Right. Yeah. And they, you know, and then Wolverine is sucked in there for some reason. He's all, you know, the whole time, his magic is terrible. Why am I here? Yeah, it's just fun. Is Ethan Sachs? He does a good comic book yarn.
I wonder why they're doing this.
I don't know, because it's. I mean, it's like Strange Academy Plus. I think he had a really good handle on the characters, though. It didn't feel terribly different from the people that Scotty Young wrote.
Mm-hmm.
The art's okay. I think there's bits of it where at the end the backgrounds like kind of disappear and suffer. They're just all against like blank walls. It was fun, though. You know, like it was a trifle. It was a little moment with characters who were fun, and then Doom shows up. Like, it was no. It's just good old superheroes, you know, the magic people, and you know.
Well, Midnight Suns was a team before, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was.
So this team is what Wolverine, Magic Looks Blade, like. Spirit Rider, and Nico from Runaways.
Yeah,
and there's yeah. Just, yeah, I'm not super interested in that concept, but. I wouldn't even
put a hard sell on it. But if you had read this because it was the patron pick, you'd have been like, yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You'd have given it 3.5, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a little thing that happens on the side.
3.5 glow sticks.
That's not a good cover.
No, it's not. That might have hurt it, too.
Yeah. No, it's possible. I mean, it's like, why is Wolverine there? I was like, well, it's clear why Wolverine's there. But I still don't know. Like, does Wolverine really move units anymore?
Right, that's what I was going to say. Is it? I mean, there was a time and place where you put Wolverine in the cover and they sold 20,000 more copies, but I don't know if that's the thing anymore.
What's funny is that Nico in this is drawn as being like, ghostly pale, like Harley Quinn, and I was like, I don't think she was like that.
She's and, gothy, isn't she?
Yeah, but not like, she's not like dead white. But in this, she is. She looks like she's got clown makeup all over her. On the cover, she just looks like a human.
Hmm.
I don't remember. Was she a teacher at the school? In Scotty's book? I don't think so.
I don't remember that. I don't remember
her
being
so
there.
I don't know why she's there. Because she's definitely like acting like she was part of the staff. Yeah. So it was fun. I enjoyed it. I wasn't going to read it. And then I saw it was Ethan Sachs and I was like, he's written a lot of books I like. I don't know. He didn't really, move up in the, what it's like, Jed McKay took the place that I thought he was going to.
Right.
And they decided not to take both of them, but they're, I find them to be similar, in their approach.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
So I didn't read Masquerade. Masquerade number one was another book that was we had this week. We'll get to it. We had five books that were in the running for patron pick. It was a 5-book race. It was all very close. So Masquerade was one of them, but I did not read it. It's Kevin Smith, you know, and all the baggage that's attendant with that.
I mean, to me, you know, it was interesting because of that. Like, that made me want to sort of see what it was. And then. This is going to be a fun. There's some fun names in this one, by the way. Kevin Smith and Andy McElfresh wrote it. He's a TV writer, from what I can. And then the art is by John Springlemeyer.
It's like an 80s villain.
Got to be fake names.
It's like an 80s college movie villain. Springlemeyer.
I think the pitch of it is not super strong. There's a city that I guess is like Gotham. It was supposed to be the big city on the hill, and now it's not. They call it the Trench, I think, is the city. Trenchin was supposed to be the next San Francisco, but they call it the Trench, and there's a crime alley. And there's a girl, and she's an influencer.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a disgraced news reporter who was fired from his job because he was sleeping with the boss's wife, who was the other one. And then he thinks that everything that the influencer does is stupid, but she has a big new show. But then bad people are getting killed by vigilantes on the street at the same time. It's weird. It's halfway kind of interesting and halfway very childish. Like they're pretty upfront about like the sex and stuff that's going on in the book, which, I don't know, for some reason it feels out of place in a lot of comics. Like, it's normal stuff you would see in places, but I don't know. It feels like standards on what you do with this stuff changes all over the place, and it just felt a little off. I'm not going to tell you it was bad. I'm not going to tell you it was good. I'm not sure what it is. There's something here that's interesting, but there's other parts of it that make me not want to read this at all. And the art was the same way. Like, there's certain pages where I was like, I do not like this. And there's other stuff where I thought it worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of this. I don't know if I'm going to read more, but at least I can tell you it was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't sit here and tell you like, oh, this was a piece of shit, but I can't tell you it was great. And that little conflict is interesting.
That's Kevin Smith in a nutshell, isn't it?
Kind of. And it's, to me, it is really interesting. Like, we were big fans of the thing that he did for a long time and then just went on a complete reversal. But I also don't think he's doing anything different than he's ever done.
No.
It's just, I don't know, our sensibilities moved on in a way that his didn't. And I can't fault him for that.
No, I don't fault him. He's got a giant house in the hills.
I don't even mean that. Like, just as, like, living your artist life and doing the thing you're going to, like, he made it work. That movie he put on his credit card worked out for him and he got this life. But I don't know that his work is compelling to me as it would have been or should have been. But I don't know what this is. I think I'm going to read the next one just so I can see if I can figure it out.
A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance 11. This has been one of the oddest books that Rick Remender has done. I thought last issue was the last issue. Mm-hmm. And so this came out. I was like, wait, what? And then this issue is actually the last issue. This is a Grandi fanboy tradition. But Andre Lima Araujo is the artist. And here we've got a time jump 10 years later. And the Steve Bannon character has been arrested for something. And he is in a federal penitentiary in Pennsylvania that's sort of like minimum security clubhouse.
It's the country club prison that you hear about. Country club prison.
There's a pool. There's tennis courts. There's soccer. There's a woman who comes every Tuesday to give him a blowjob. There's good drugs, and he watches movies. Like, it's not that bad. And then, you know, the kid who was the kid in the previous 10 issues is now an adult, and he is shows up as a guard in the prison and kills him. It was a very much an epilogue issue from the whole. I just don't know that I understand this whole story. I enjoyed the run.
Yeah.
The art was amazing. There was
perfect.
Interesting things that happened along the way, but I don't know that I understood what I was supposed to understand about the story.
What?
Maybe it was nothing. I don't know.
I don't know what it's trying to get at. And in a way, it's a little like poetry. Like, yeah. I feel like it was left very open, and the sort of ending sequence for this was very strange.
Yeah,
there were three pages of no dialogue.
Well, this whole book has been very un-Rick in terms of dialogue.
Yeah.
So, like, one, there's two, three, four, five. The final five pages includes three word balloons.
Yeah. And
that's
I'm not
Rick
sure
Remender,
what they were
usually
trying to say. I don't know who the guy in the car was. I don't remember from the beginning. I remember the beginning. Benedict Wong, his mother was in the hospital,
yeah, it was all
and
very
then
confusing.
There were people chasing him, but he was also a killer for hire.
He was either a killer for hire or mistaken for one. Like, it was all very confusing.
And then he ended up, I don't remember the middle part at all. He ended up with the boy.
He lived in
the boy.
Camp for a while. There was
right.
a camp in the woods.
And then the guy came and they killed the guy. They killed the bad guy, the blonde man.
Yeah.
Kind of lost it after that, and then they were living a life together, and it was, how did that last one, 10, end? Did Benedict Wong die?
Yes.
Okay, right. And so this is he gets the revenge here, and it seems like in the end, everything's fucking beautiful. He smiles, he waves his hand out the window, we see a blue jay singing in a tree.
He does that thing that people, you know, where you wave, you do the wave on the, as the car's driving with the wind.
You feel the air go over your hand.
I don't know. I don't know about this book. I enjoyed reading it. I don't know that I got it, but it was an experience that was enjoyable.
Right, and that's what you have to ask yourself. Like, what did he? Maybe it's on purpose. Maybe he's deconstructing a narrative, and it's not so much about what the story is, but like how you feel. You know, like he's the book's about vengeance. It's in the title, and there's these tone poems in comic book form on vengeance. I don't know. Like, at the end, though, the kid gets vengeance and he is happy. Like, the vengeance is the satisfaction that he needed to find joy. It's very strange, but I don't know what to make of it, but I did enjoy it. I read every one of them.
I did. I mean, I like it as an experiment, you know? Like,
yeah.
Rick doing something very different. I like that.
Over in Daredevil number 641.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we've talked about this a lot, and I've been...
It's 651.
So, okay. Listen, they put a bunch of numbers on there.
I get it. I appreciate you,
fingers.
You know, going for it, though.
Sure. Or number three, if you want to go that way. Actually, you know what my problem here with 651 is? I can barely see this. That's what's happening there.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
it's finally happening.
Oh, yeah. There's a little bit in this where Matt is meeting with Cole, who is the cop who's been around since the beginning of this. Maybe even before. Was he in Mark Waid's run?
No, he showed up in Chip's run.
Okay, that's fine. I like their relationship and where that character has developed been into. And Matt's on his crusade, and he's super arch and serious. Like, there's no fun about him at all right now.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, my instinct is to not like it. But as I sort of kept going through this issue, I was like, I am super intrigued. I'm really interested. And, you know, the art is good. It's not Chichetto, but there's really beautiful stuff where he's leaping around through the city and it's raining because it's Daredevil. There's a bit where he talks to Luke Cage. Luke Cage goes to see those
the storm winds,
the evil rich people from the last one who we thought we were done with.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, this is interesting. And then everything that happened after that was super interesting.
Well, now that I remember what happened, I'm not surprised this is on the rundown. So, yes, yeah, so Matt's whole thing is he and Elektra are going to take over the Hand. And so he's trying to recruit the cop to help because the cop mm-hmm. knows right from wrong. At first, I thought it was Luke Cage because we were tight in his face and we didn't see his hair. And he's just a black guy with a beard. And I was like, oh, it's Luke. Nope, that's cool. So he's running, right. he's trying to recruit this guy, and he doesn't really want to get involved with ninja stuff. And he goes to talk to Luke Cage and says, you know, you're done now. You saved the city from Wilson Fisk. You don't have to be mayor anymore. He's like, no, I want to be mayor. I want to change the city. Anyway,
and
I got a meeting.
That true, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I buy this.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Because his whole thing was cleaning up Harlem. Now he's got a chance to clean up everything else in a different way. And I was like, that totally works. Like,
oh,
at
for
first,
sure.
when you're
sense.
Like, Luke Cage is mayor, you're like, where's this from? And now I'm like, I totally get it. It's good.
And now he's got a 4 a.m. meeting with some important people. Turns out it's the Stormwinds, and they're all, you know, flexing their rich people muscle and saying basically,
really,
you work for
and
us
really
now.
Fun writing on that.
Yeah.
You know, like making it huge. Like, this is the picture of the Earth, just so you have an idea of what we own. Oh.
So it was, you know, now Luke's got a big problem because these people are very powerful. And then as we cut back to Matt, you know, going on his journey through the city, and thinking in his head about the Hand, and then fighting that girl. Who was the girl?
Akka?
I forgot.
AKA is her name.
That's when he mentions, and she tells him the current leader of the Hand is the Punisher, and I went, oh, fuck, right. Mm-hmm. And that's now I understand why this is, you know, so this is bringing together the book that you were really enjoying with this book.
Yeah, I just went, God, I really like that. And I, yeah. You know, I might have had a shot at Pick of the Week for much the same reason that Captain Marvel was.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought as he's swinging through the city, I was like, man, this book looks like New York City. Like they've got it. It doesn't look like, you know, Toronto that they're using as it. But there's a bit on page 21, and it's just Matt jumping. He's going over a bus.
Yeah.
But he's got his bloused pants on, and I thought, that looks awesome.
His ninja pants. Yeah, I've come around on the ninja pants. I think they're cool.
Yeah. I think he looks really, really good, and he looks real in a way that Daredevil, like, I'm like, I don't see him in a skinny, tight leotard. It doesn't jibe with the character the way he's being written.
And also that scene, we talked about this before, how he's the most nakedly religious character in comics, in mainstream comics, right?
Zdarsky's leaning into it.
And so he has a whole monologue about, you know, the previous arc with Goldie, his friend from college, who says he's been pulling the strings in Matt's life. And what does that mean about God? Because he thought God was doing that. And does that mean God is pulling Goldie's strings to pull his strings? Like, it was all very sort of determinism Russian nesting doll situation,
right?
Which was interesting because no other superhero has that conversation.
I gotta say, you know, as we're and I put this in the short section because I thought, well, we've talked about all this before, but as I go through this, like, a lot happened in this issue.
Yeah.
There's four major scenes in this that have impacts, and
it's not less than 20 pages.
Yeah, and it's just, and I, you know, it's a run that Chip Zdarsky, man, it gets stronger as he keeps going. And it's a Daredevil book. Like, it feels like Daredevil. Yeah, that's my thing.
So those are the books we want to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron of the show can vote to add a book to the rundown. And as I said earlier, this week was, one of the tightest races we've had in a while in terms of there were five books in contention until late in the game, and then one book took the lead. But for a while, it was like there were five books within two votes of each other, which is...
And we talked about most of them, just for the record.
But this week, the winner was Batman versus Robin, number one, from Mark Waid, Mahmoud Asrar, Jordy Belair, and Steve Wands. This is a new...
That's a strong team.
It's a good team.
Paper.
Five-issue miniseries, oversized issues. This is like a 40-page comic. And I initially not going to read it because it's Batman and Damian, and I was like, eh. But the house ads got me because it's spinning out of the events of World's Finest, and I was like, wait, what? Because that book feels very out of continuity. So I was like, oh, fuck. And it's Mark Waid, and he's finally back in the DCU proper, and Alfred's in the cover, so I read it. I was going to read it anyway, even if it wasn't patron pick. But
And this is Asrar doing DC work after a long time at Marvel.
Yes.
So.
there was a lot of compelling reasons to read it. And so I read it, and I enjoyed it. It's very Mark Waidy, you know? Like, it feels lighter than current DC / Batman stuff. You know, Bruce is a little bit lighter, which is good.
But while still being pretty dark, you know, in terms of a Batman book. Like, so I read this first just because
the tone feels lighter, what I mean, overall.
They come out, you know, DC comes out earlier, and yep. I read this first. And the whole time I was thinking, what is Connor going to think of this? Because I thought, there's no way you can't read it. It's a Mark Waid Batman book.
Right.
And I've been reading Robin and really enjoying it because I think at some point, we complained for years, like, that Damian was a problem.
Yeah.
And I think that they have fixed him to a certain extent. I've really enjoyed the Robin run that Josh Williamson's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I've really enjoyed Damian over with John Kent. They pushed him over to a certain point, and this has something to do with that Josh Williamson stuff, Lazarus Island.
Yeah, it comes out of both those books, the Robin book and the World's Finest.
And you know, they took away the snotty part of his character and really looked into like what is a person who is a combination of these two people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's been being done well lately, and I think this is a logical extension of it to a certain point. Now, what's true is that as soon as we meet Robin in this, something's clearly wrong with him. Some shit's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I think we're going to find out that it's a ruse or whatever, and they're all playing everybody else or whatever to get to the truth. Whatever. But the big moment, of course, and I believe this is in continuity,
is
that Pennyworth comes home.
Well, he was wasn't he resurrected in Robin?
I believe so. They alluded to it, but they did not show it.
They Lazarus pitted him?
I think so.
And he's got both of his hands, which is good, and he can make tea again.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked the best about this issue was that it didn't get too deep into that. He was just back. He shows up at the manor. And Mark Waid was the architect of one of my favorite resurrections, which was Captain America in the 90s when Red Skull just tossed his dead body into a machine and threw a bunch of levers, pressed some buttons, and he came back. And it was like, there's no explanation necessary. This is, you know... This is what you get, and I don't need to go into how he's back. They threw his body in the Lazarus pit or whatever.
Have been gone.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a mistake. That was a 5G mistake. That shouldn't have happened. But he's back, and that's important because Batman's really been lacking for not having Alfred as a character in the book.
Yeah. He's unmoored to a certain extent. I think it's important to note, by the way, that when he's back, he's got his full tuxedo on.
Well, yeah.
I don't know where he picked that up along the way. You know, it's raining out. He's been traveling. It's not the best choice, but it is what you expect to see.
Well, you know how Batman's got like stuff stashed all over the city? I assume the same as Alfred has tuxedos all over the world.
Do you think that his tuxedos are like high tech in any way? Like they look like normal tuxedos, but are they like bulletproof or they should be?
Probably not, but you're right. They should be. I think Damian is okay if they turn him into a full-fledged sort of gray villain character and not Robin. If he stops being Robin, I'm okay with it. As long as he's Robin, then I've got a problem. No matter what
he's going to be Robin.
Well, I'll never accept him as a character. Then he's a terrible Robin. But if they move him off into being, you know, this other character, then that's fine. But he's an awful Robin.
I mean, he's a different Robin. You wouldn't want him to be the same Robin because you already have that Robin. And I think in any way, like, he's going to be Batman. Like, if you follow this story, I don't mean like in continuity or in the stories, I'm sure there will be, but like, if you follow out the logic of this story, he becomes Batman after Bruce Wayne. There's no way that's not the end of that story if you're writing that story.
So this involves a lot of magic users because the tie-in to the World's Finest book is that demon they were fighting in the first arc. Nezra, what was that name?
Whatever.
Nezra. And so all the magic users are in trouble. You've got Robin has teamed up with the kid who runs the Justice Society genie.
Oh, right, yeah. And
Joaquin and then
Tim Hunter, who Tim you Hunter don't expect to see in a Batman book.
From the Sandman universe. They all attack Batman in the cave, and then later on we see Zatanna and other people, and Constantine and Swamp Thing are all messed up because all magic users have been attacked by this demon Nezra. So you know, normally I wouldn't be into a magic story like this, but it's such a strange Batman story that it works. And the Mahmoud Asra art was terrific.
Oh, he's fantastic, and he's getting better all the time. You know, the fight that happens, they find their way into the Batcave and they have the fight there, you know, and the genie resurrects the dinosaur and they ride the... I was like, all right, that is what's supposed to happen in the magic fight in the Batcave.
Right.
You know, ride that dinosaur around and the Robin costume from the case attacks Batman, even though it has hands, so I guess that works.
Yeah.
I know, just cool
all the
comic
all the costumes
shit.
Attack him, his dad's costume and his old Batman
yeah.
costume.
Oh yeah, all those from the cases. You know, when you show up, it's funny that you said this was long because clearly it is as I flipped through it, but I did not notice as I was reading
no,
it.
No.
You know, they go to see Zatanna and like that what they do with her is scary and awesome and interesting. Like, are you dead? Well, I'm not dead and I'm not alive. And she's hanging and her head's over and it's scary, and you go back to a really awful fight that they had, and yeah. I enjoyed it. It's not, I wouldn't, you're right. Like on paper, the team looks great, but the story, you know, and the title is what it is, Batman versus Robin, but there's going to be a twist on that obviously at some point.
And Batman is separated from his stuff. So he lays out, he's got like,
I like that.
A batarang. He's got like lock picks, a one rope. Like he's all he's got left for this.
He's got a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Some gas belts and explosives.
Two batarangs, rope.
Five of them.
Yeah, and so that's it. He's him and Alfred, that's all they got to fight this battle. And it was, you know, Mark Waid is, this is where he's, you know, he can write anywhere, but
yeah.
He's been gone from DC for so long, it feels like a very breath of fresh air doing this.
I mean, yeah, you want to talk about, I don't know that Dan Didio did this, but, you know, what a waste to not have Mark Waid writing.
He totally did. They had a falling out, and that's when.
Right, I know, but like, you know, Mark Waid is not, it's not without fault, is my guess, to a certain extent. He's a volatile personality at times, and I don't think that's speaking out of school. I think he'd probably be like, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever reason, the two of them, but it sucks. He should have been there all along. He's a guiding hand. He's a, you know, he's a keystone. Mm-hmm. I think that they need to have. Around. So
what's really funny is that he was never someone, and I know we need to move on, but he's never someone you never really associated with Batman. Like,
yeah,
he certainly
yeah,
wrote Batman, but he wasn't like a Batman guy. He was more of a Superman guy. But now here you've got him writing two books, and both of them are Batman. So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Ratings on Batman versus Robin, number one. Ratings.
Solid 4.
Yeah. I'm going to go 4.2.
Oh, wow.
2.
Like, did it accomplish what it set out to do? Yes, totally. You know, what was its? I think it achieved its intention with the thing and took advantage of all the skilled folks working on it.
Reading the whole issue,
absolutely.
The whole mini.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be fun.
So,
what do the patrons get?
If you're a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy, in addition to voting on the rundown, if you give it the $5 or higher level, get a superpower live on the show, which is one of our favorite things to do. And this week, Josh is doing it.
Who's Gary? Your son. Gary.
Who's this Gary fellow you're always mentioning?
If you know what that is, you're old as balls. Gary, our patron this week, remembers old movies. No, he creates backups. He creates backups of everything at all times so that things can be... Everything is backed up. All the, like, where'd you find that? I'm not sure, but I've got the backup over here. He's unlimited supply of backups. Only one. He's got the... But you could do a backup of a backup, I guess. But he creates backups. It's a very useful person to have around.
Is it just of files or is it anything?
It's anything.
So like,
the means to reproduce a thing. Like he doesn't like say that Batman's giant dinosaur goes missing. He doesn't have another dinosaur back there, but he has the means to bring him back and have a backup.
So I think it'd be funny if like you ripped your favorite shirt and just like he reaches behind his back and pulls out another one.
That's also possible. It's I think each situation has its own
right
solution to it. But I think, and to be fair, I do have a shirt that I bought at a Bad Religion show back in March, And I was walking around the other day, and I was like, I feel like there's a thread on me, and I couldn't find it. And I looked, and I got home, and I lifted my arm up, and the whole armpit had split. Not because I'm fat, but because I'm swole. No, it just had it just ripped. And I would like to have a backup of that shirt.
Cheap merchandise.
You know what? I've had other Bad Religion. I got concert shirts that last forever. I think you pay $40 for those goddamn things. It should last. The shirt is not the problem when I no longer wear it.
So Gary backs anything up, which is a very useful power.
Sure.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. You can get yourself superpower live on the show like Gary. Thanks for being a patron. Let's do a quick email from Carl. He says, on DC Universe Infinite, I'm reading and enjoying the Human Target series you've been reviewing. However, it got me thinking that right now DC has so many out-of-continuity stories, and even in the main continuity, the multiverse is a cornerstone, that it feels very confusing. Isn't that the reason DC did Crisis on Infinite Earths originally? Old guys like us who've been reading comics forever might be able to sort it out and keep track of it, but newer readers must be baffled. Should DC simplify things again?
You know how I didn't know who Gary was? Yeah. What are newer readers?
It's sort of the Warner Brothers / DC corporate mandate, the multiverse. It's a company-wide thing. And I'm not refuting, I'm just explaining. It's a company-wide mandate that extends to the films and the TV shows as well as the comics. So it's kind of their ethos right now is the multiverse, because that allows them to have a Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie and also a different kind of Joker in a Batman movie, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas before they were very sort of regimented about that stuff. So on the one hand, it's kind of nice that they're being flexible now, because they used to be really unflexible as a company. But I don't know.
Not wrong. There is a lot of out of continuity stuff, but yeah. I actually just tend to think about that as like, that's how comics are now. You know, at the time when Marvel split everything in that they did into miniseries and they renumbered everything that happened, everything became disjointed. I mean, literally, that number is a metaphor, you know, for like we're breaking this all up into modular pieces. And I think you're right, like you wouldn't be able to keep track of it. But then I would ask the question, like, why do you need to? For the most part. And it leads to confusing moments for sure, like in a story. In comic books specifically, the moment is going to be at the last page when the villain is shown and steps out of it. You're like, wait, who is this? What happened? You know, what is the backstory that plays into this? But a good comic book writer should be able to set all that stuff up. I kind of like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't dislike it. It is, when you have ostensibly a shared universe, you kind of need to know what the rules are just to get your footing. And DC has been really bad about that in the last few years in terms of, we've talked about it a lot on the show. There's being the bedrock of DC is being uncertain because of, you know, they rebooted with the New 52 11 years ago. And then they've tried several times since then to sort of make sense of that, because it didn't really go the way they I guess, planned. And then, you know, now the idea is sort of like anything goes. And that makes it hard for readers who like the shared universe, but also comics have always had out of continuity stuff. Not just,
I mean,
DC,
that's the
but
no
every,
prize.
Everybody,
that's where it came from. They couldn't keep track of it, and they just, that's the magic button, you know.
Right, but even like, you know, and DC especially, Dark Knight Returns was out of continuity. Like, there's always been things that they've done. That's
you're right. DC has definitely been, I mean, they had Elseworlds, which is the word we use for everything else. And it's just, there's more of that now. You know, as readers, as people who enjoy stories, I think we're better off for it. Because if you don't do that, you don't get Deceased. You don't get Tom Taylor's career. You don't get Dark Knight Returns. You don't get, you know, and it works the other way too. You can be like, you know, why'd they bring back the Watchmen, you know, in the thing that kind of happened and didn't happen? It doesn't matter. You know, that we used to say this all the time, and I think it still holds true. You make your own continuity.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do. Because nothing makes sense, and nothing matters. We put that on a shirt, and I think we lost it as a central tenet of the show, but it's important to remember.
Yeah. When I started reading comics as a kid regularly, it was the 80s, and it was post-crisis when it was like a regular thing for me to read comics. But I was reading a lot. I was reading about pre-crisis comics too, and it was just, you had to figure it out. And I know kids seem to have a better a looser, more malleable brain in terms of being able to just go with the flow, where adults really need everything to be spelled out and laid out for them. This is something that Grant Morrison talked about in his book. But I don't know that DC has a comics of a multiverse problem. I think DC has a foundational problem in which...
Go on.
People don't seem to know who these characters are. And I don't know that DC seems to know who the characters are either. And Dark Crisis certainly isn't doing anything to sort anything out. No one cares.
I mean, that almost feels like it's on purpose. You know, just you know, anything goes.
Right. Like, this is like, who is Superman? Well, there's two of them. You know, how many Robins are there? There's seven. You know, like, it's that's to me the downside of anything goes, is that there's just a lot to sort through.
Yeah, but it does let you, like, then you can let it go and you don't have that feel. I don't know if this helps their publishing efforts, but it doesn't feel like, well, I can let this go. Mm-hmm. I don't need to, you know, like, if you like any of the Robins, you know, then you got a place where you can enjoy them right now. And I think that that's fine. Like, you're kind of making your own way. And, you know, the other thing is, like you were saying, after Crisis, you know, things were a certain way. And it's like, well, that's 40 years ago.
Right.
So, of course, things are going to change. We live in a completely different world right now.
And there's been, like, three reboots or reorganizations of the continuity.
Right. And I mean, it could be said that Marvel usually has, and, you know, we're not, I don't know how much good it does is to compare and contrast them, but Marvel usually has more of a unifying voice, I think, over time. And DC hasn't had a voice for a while. Like, it's hard to pin down the tone of DC, which is the same with the movies compared to, you know, DC versus Marvel.
Right. DC Comics really hasn't, I mean, I don't want to pin it solely on the reboot, but DC really hasn't had a voice since Geoff Johns stopped being in charge of the books. Or the main voice behind the books. It's been sort of scattered since then.
Yeah, I think you're
right. I don't have a problem. I don't think there's a multiverse problem. I mean, even Marvel's embracing the multiverse in their storytelling. I don't think multiverse is an issue. I think it's you can do whatever you want when the foundation is strong, when you know where the stories and characters are coming from. Then you can sort of run off in any direction as long as you have a base of, these are the characters, this is their history, these are their relationships. Then you can take them in any direction you want.
I mean, I think we need to accept that the idea of continuity as we understood it as people who read comics in the 80s and 90s, it's over to a certain extent. Like, you have to be much more flexible about how you approach these, because that's the world we're in now. It's just different now.
And even Marvel, which has different problems than DC. Like, Marvel's problem is that everything feels disconnected from itself. So, like, it doesn't feel like a shared universe like it used to, because everything...
I agree with that.
And I think writing for the trade also affected that as well. Mm-hmm. Everything had to be a self-contained story. And so there's pluses and minuses to all of these things.
But if you look at just culture in general, you know, the long tail theory, you know, it's like that everything is just more pick and choose. You know, like, life's a buffet, you know, rather than a catered meal at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, you take what you want out of the things, you take as much or as little as you want of the thing. You know, the people who, you know, before there was like two possible meals you could choose, you know, you're gonna have the chicken or the fish. That's over. You know, everybody gets their little bit of what they want, and that is extended to every part of life. You know, with social media, with streaming television, with, you get the thing you want in the way that you want it, and it may have absolutely nothing to do with the way that the person next to you is, and you have that choice now. And I think that is extended to how comic books are made.
And I would never want a comic book world where you couldn't get a book like The Human Target, because it's so terrific. You know, like, I want a comics industry where I can have that story, that out of continuity DC story.
Yeah, and the other side of that,
or deceased, is, or,
you know, like, it's you've got great creators now who have more freedom than they did before to do interesting stories.
Honestly, a lot of the problems would be mitigated if they just brought back the Elseworlds button. I don't know why they won't. I would love to know why that was really gotten rid of, and why they won't bring it back. Because it seemed like it would solve a lot of people's angst.
Yeah, but also, it might have done the opposite, though. It might have had people stop reading, not read something because of that. It sort of puts a label on something and they may just not read a story because it's in or out of continuity. And so
that may be why they got rid of it in the first place, but it's just interesting because I remember, you know, they brought in Black Label and then they said, these are out of continuity DC stories. And they've been doing that, but people still don't understand that because it doesn't say it on the book. Like Elseworlds would say it like the first page, this is out of continuity, but you know, it's people are still tethered to it. And I'm to a certain extent, I am. I like the shared universe aspect of it. I like knowing the history of the characters and how this scene affects things, you know, down the line or before. Like it's a plus to me. But the problem is when it becomes an anchor. You know, it should never be an anchor. It should always be a plus to the story, not a minus.
I mean, the most important thing is to tell an interesting story,
right?
Period. And it, for me, that's the thing that is important at the end of the day. Like that's the thing I care about most. And you know, it's funny because with continuity, I'd be like, I'm so confused sometimes. You know, I don't know the history or whatever. And now I just, it's part and parcel. I'm just, all right, whatever. I'll figure it out. The story's well done.
What Carl says, I mean, there is some truth to should DC simplify. And the problem DC's had, and I think the reason why they're in so much of a mess they're in is because when they rebooted in 2011, they didn't go far. They didn't actually... They partially rebooted, and so they tried to have their cake and eat it too. They tried to reboot everyone, make them younger and simplify, but then they wanted to continually reference things that happened in the past, and it didn't work within the framework they created. It was like, wait, how is Bruce Wayne 30 but has had 7 Robins and Crisis still happened and Barbara still got shot like by the Joker? Like, it didn't make any sense, and now you've got a convoluted framework for the universe in which they tried to make everything simple, but they started to keep everything at the same time, and that was really the original sin of the reboot in 2011, and that's what they haven't really fixed since then. And I've been reading Dark Crisis only to just keep an eye on what's happening in the.
You have any idea what's happening? I pretty much, if Captain Carrot shows up, I'm out.
It's so ineffectual. It leaves my brain immediately. Like, I don't know what's happening.
It's not even that I have a problem with Captain Carrot, but he's a symbol that I'm not going to understand what happens next. Captain Carrot's there. Oh, I got nothing. I'm out.
He's just in the background.
It doesn't matter. He's like it's the grim hand of death for me understanding a story. Like, if you read a story and the Grim Reaper is standing behind you, like, okay, I know what's going to happen. These people are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
When Captain Carrot shows up, I'm not going to be able to keep track of it.
So, I think DC does need to figure out what it wants to be and make steps to get there. Whereas trying to be everything in continuity doesn't work, which has nothing to do with out of continuity stories, which are great and should never go away.
I would say it's very likely that problem is going to persist until DC as a company knows what it is. You're talking about like an editorial strategy, and I think right now all of that stuff is in so much flux, you know, from the top down. Warner Brothers is in flux. They're not going to be able to stick on something because I don't think anybody knows if they're going to be there in a year. And that's been like that for 5 years.
Yeah. It's a conundrum, Carl. It's a conundrum. Contact@ifanboy.com is how Carl wrote in. Thanks for writing in to get his email on the show. Real quick, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where people support the show. ifanboy.threadless.com is where you buy t-shirts. And actually, there's a sale going on right now. So if you're listening to the show as it comes out, if you enter code TAKE15, TAKE15 at checkout, you get 15% off your order. That is until 9/19. So like I said, it's expiring like basically Monday after the show is released. So if you listen to the show early and you want to buy a t-shirt, you can 15% off your order right now with code TAKE15 at ifanboy.threadless.com. FMO.com/support is our PayPal tip jar. FMO.com/Amazon is our Booksplode books and our general shopping link. And bookshop.org is who we partnered with for some links. You'll find those on the website as well. So those are all the ways you can help us. We're long, so I'm flying through this part. But those are all the ways that we keep the lights on, pay the bills. And all the bills have gone up like everybody else's bills this year. I was just doing...
Yeah, we're increasing everyone's Patreons by... 30%.
Just doing the books a couple days ago.
You're going to see that on your next bill.
Oh. So let's quickly talk
about
what's
not true
coming, and let's get out of here. So last time we mentioned the Media Explode is coming. We actually had to push it a week for dumb reasons. So this week, you're going to get the Media Explode, in which we review the Poseidon Adventure from 1972. This is our old men and old movies feature. So we'll hear about that classic disaster film. And then next week...
But wait, there's more.
We're gonna have a special edition, and you're gonna be saying what and why. But both of those questions will be answered on the show. Josh and I are going to be discussing Moonfall versus Geostorm special edition. We've only done a few of these out of nowhere special editions in our history of this iFanboy, but this is one of them, and we'll explain on the show. But this week, the Poseidon Adventure, Meteor Explode. Next week, special edition Moonfall versus Geostorm. And that's going to be in lieu of this month's Talksplode. If you've been following Josh's social media, you know he's got a lot on his plate, and he can't focus on producing the Meteor Talksplode, which is a very time-intensive thing.
And we can do stuff that's fun. And yes, it was like, hey, you want to do this? Yeah. Is there any reason not to? No. Awesome. And it was totally worth it, even if it was just for us.
That's right. So then next month, there will be a Booksplode. We'll be talking about Cosmic Odyssey from Jim Starlin and Mike Mignola. And then Pick-A-Leak 850 will be happening live, like we do with our live shows. So if you want to watch us record Pick-A-Leak 850, the three-hour extravaganza, that'll be happening live Friday, October 7th, around 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. We haven't actually scheduled it yet amongst ourselves, but that's usually when we do it. If you want to get your email on the show, it's an all-email show. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and put 850 in the subject line, and people have been doing that. Thank you. And as I said last week, the earlier you get in, the better, because we tend to put the emails in the show chronologically. We move them around a little bit if there's thematic things you can move, but for the most part, they're chronological. So if you want to get your email on the show, the best thing to do is get it in early. And look forward to doing that and seeing you all there at the in the chat room. And then we mentioned this last week, but we'll mention it one last time. Me and Josh and Ryan all participated in the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show up against each other. It was a head-to-head matchup between the three of us. And usaquizshow.com is where you can find that show. And it was a lot of fun. It was very close. There was a lot of ball busting. They cut a lot of ball busting out of the show.
That's a mistake.
And it was a good time. So if you want to hear us compete, usaquizshow.com.
My favorite part was that I went into a flow state at one point. And it was so good. And
I was so mad at you in the final round. I was like,
I assume you knew all those answers.
I did know all those answers.
Hey, we had choices, and you made yours.
I didn't. I was the last pick. I had two choices. One of them was clearly about music. Anyway, what are we talking about? You'll find out at usaquizshow.com.
I'll do this part. You've been talking for a while. All right. You can find all the shows that we've ever done over at ifanboy.com. There's an archive of comic book writing from our staff over the years. All the podcasts and stuff that are available are linked there. 100 Talksplodes, a bunch of Booksplodes, special editions, animated, but it's all there. If there's something you want to watch that you never have, you know, there's probably a show on it that we did. You can find out what the pick of the week is before it comes. This show comes out. You will have read it. You will be ready to go by following @iFanboy on Twitter or @iFanboyComics on Instagram. Connor and I are on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/iFanboy. All the videos are up. Did those new ones get uploaded?
No, the two haven't gone up yet. Okay. I just haven't had time.
That's fine. In the last week. So.
I need to do it because this guy's holding them for us on his server. I just need to download them. Okay. Damien from Poland, I'm going to do that very soon, and I'll let you know.
So there's plenty there besides. You think of a topic in comics, we probably did it. We were content mad back before that was a thing. Seven shows a week. Whew.
At one point.
You want me to keep going?
Sure.
If you like this show, you can write a review, leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, what would they call it? Podcatcher? Was that the word they used? Podcatchers of choice. Better yet, word of mouth, tell people. Social media is probably going to be how you do that. But if you do it in the flesh, if you do it in person, if you do an analog recommendation, that's rad too. We like that. You can be our street team, our marketing arm, not PR. We'll handle our own PR. So that is it. Thank you for listening. I think, Connor, the show did its job.
Yes.
You think the show did its job this week, as it always does. It is reliable, and I have to assume that if it does a job for us, it's doing the job for you that it's supposed to.
See, what you don't know is while you were doing that whole bit, I was just doing my dance. You can't see because it's audio, but right, I was doing my glow stick dance.
I thought that when you did the dance like that, you're blocking out the whole world, but you were still, you're a broadcasting professional.
I'm a professional. We've been doing this for so long. I can hear it in the background and get right back to the chair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
but in your head it's still goosh, goosh, goosh.
In my head,
goosh,
I'm still
goosh, goosh. Drop the beat.
I'm just watching the patterns in the air from the glow sticks.
I know that you think I'm going to do something with the music on this, but I don't. I wouldn't even know where to find that music.
So, until next week, I am Connor.
And I'm seeing and hearing colors, mate. When the police look at it. Me, I'm listening to dance music. Dance music.